Welcome to Expedition Self on OM Times Radio with lifelong learner, entrepreneur, and creator of the worlds of Expedition Self, Sam Parado. Sam shares 4 decades of studying, guiding, and teaching how to go inside so we can build an incredibly powerful, dynamic, and validating relationship with the self. Expedition Self is laced with stellar, unexpected insights about what it means to be human. Listen now and ignite your self-development process with Sam Parado.
Well, hello and welcome to Expedition Self. I'm Sam Parado, and we're in for a treat this evening. You know, I started this last season having an opportunity to talk to people in my life who are very engaged in their own growth process. And I'm so excited we're going to get to have a guest this evening. But before we do that, and before I introduce her, I just want to say one thing to everyone is I will be going on a hiatus from doing live shows on Tuesday nights at 8. This will be my last night until Tuesday. I think it's July 11th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, yeah, the 11th at 8 p.m. And so that's when I'll be back. In the meantime, we'll be airing repeat shows that I've already done over the period. So if you've missed any, this is a good time to catch up on them again. So, all right, here we are. So I want to introduce Cynthia. And Cynthia, to me, is just one of these amazing Renaissance women. How do I want to say this? Like every part of life, she takes in and makes it hers and embodies it and blossoms inside of it and makes it more. And so one of my favorite things about Cynthia is that she has these wonderful book lists that she reads, and she makes awesome food, and she loves the garden, and she's creative, and she writes, and she loves life, and she laughs often, and oh my gosh, I mean, the list just could go on and on and on. So without further listing of all the things that I think when I think of you, Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sam. I love hearing how you see me.
I do see you that way.
Everyone should have a friend to introduce them like that.
Oh, well, that's cool. That's cool. I think I could have gone on for a much longer list, honestly. When I think of you, I feel like you can do anything, or you know, figure anything out, and anything you do, you bring this artistic joie de vivre to every bit of it, or this intensity of I'm going to be inside of it. And I always, of course, it's why we're friends, and what I love and how I get inspired when I'm with you.
Well, thank you. The feeling is mutual. And I think of all the things that you said about me, the thing that I cherish the most is laughs often, because I feel like people who laugh easily and often, to me, that's a sign of a good life.
Well, and it is so true of you. You always have a ready smile or a ready delight, right, that just happens, or oh my gosh, can you believe how dumb this is, laugh, right? It's just like anything that about life that tickles you, and it's not always the most beautiful happy thing, you know. Well, so I have some things I just want to talk about, and really I want to make sure that you as listeners, Cynthia is a writer and she's written books and she's an artist and she's a grower, right? That's the part, right? She's a seeker, and she is somebody who walks in life looking for what is the truth? What is the deepest meaning of this? What is it that I can get connected to that makes life more for me? And so one of the things I thought about, and you know, these are probably going to be questions that if we were sitting talking over Zoom, right, for one of our chats, I might not ask these questions. But since I get to do this for the show and I feel like the world gets to learn about you, this is my opportunity to ask these questions too. But I'm interested in what do you remember as your very, like your first moment of saying, wait just a minute, something's missing here. It's emotion. Like there's some feeling here that's not getting discussed, or some part of my life needs attention and it has to do with emotions. Do you remember when that was or what the circumstances were?
I'm not really great at going back in time and remembering things like that off the cuff, but I would say it was probably sometime in my childhood, because I feel like I have a lot of emotions that kind of course through me, and there just wasn't a lot of room for that expression of that when I was growing up. And so I remember I would just like be so frustrated and stomp off to my room and slam the door and just like throw my shoes in the closet just to get out that emotion, that frustration and anger. Uh-huh. Is that what you're thinking of? That kind of thing, like that far back?
Yeah. Well, because I was kind of interested in, you know, what was the moment, right? Where like I had a moment for me where I just remember, you know, crying all the time because I was so lonely. And I didn't hear anybody talking about it, right? Like, so this is part of the challenge, I think, with early growth. The growth experience is that if we don't have people around us talking about the things that we're feeling on the inside, then it looks like there's no place for it. And so I was interested really at what moment did you notice you had something going on for you that others did not, or that didn't seem like they were part of your world?
I think it was kind of a continual thing as a child. And I don't know when I started journaling or keeping a diary. I had a diary, like a 5-year diary, which was just a few lines and not really knowing what to say, but probably around my teenage years, I started getting more into songs and lyrics and poetry, which was a great container for all that emotion.
I'm curious, Cynthia, you know, I don't really know this, but do you have poems that you just quote off the top of your head, or like things that, like a favorite thing that just always lives that you can just pull out from all the exposure and the interest you've had in writing and poetry and special words?
Wouldn't it be cool if I were? There's one poem that I almost have. I have a few lines from. It's called Famous by Naomi Shihab Nye. But when I first started teaching writing back in 1996, poetry was the first thing I taught. And it's not because I was such a great poet. It was because I loved poetry and I was really into it. And I wanted to get other people into it. And so I started teaching it. And that was one of the things I had everybody do in the class, was commit a poem to memory. And then in our last class, we would recite that. Back in the day, yes, I would be able to pull things out, but not right now.
Well, I learned All Mimsy Were the Borrow Groves and the Moam, that whole Jabberwocky. I learned that. And you can see how much I remember of it at this point.
Well, just the title is enough. That's just such a great word. Who needs more?
Well, it's so funny because I do think, as I look back on life, like the retrospective of things I was drawn to then are things that I return to later. And the thing I loved about Jabberwocky is it just was made up words, and it was the phraseology or the tempo or whatever that actually gave them meaning. And, you know, I make up words all the time now because, I don't know, it just seemed like the most inventive thing that you could do is make up your own language. And I don't know, I guess I would be curious, is have you found how the poetry you loved when you were young, it has infused, you know, where you are now?
Well, first I want to say that was another exercise that I like to give to people, is to write in gibberish. Because sometimes we come to writing and we're so serious, and it's just really like a party killer. And it's like just playing with sound and words is just fun. But the thing, one of my favorite poets is Naomi Shihab Nye. She's an American poet from Texas. And the things I like about her poems is that they really touch on the everyday and everyday objects. And that poem Famous talks about that. There's, she mentions a tear, a button, a folded photograph and a wallet, and just these shoe, the heel, the stiletto, like, so just these ordinary objects of our lives and how they can be so imbued with emotion. And I think that's a big part of who I am now, and how I live, the objects that I have around me, and then the objects that, the things that I like to draw and paint are just kind of the everyday cup. I love that.
Yeah, that's right. And it is what you I know, actually, when I met you, and for those of you who are listening, I got to meet Cynthia when she was teaching a workshop at a Good Life Project kind of summer camp, summer adult camp. And one of the things I was so struck by is that you made a cup look delightful and to me a little whimsical and artistic. And, you know, for somebody like me who at that point really did not believe I could draw anything. Remember, I would talk to you about if I could just draw my dreams, it would make me happy. And you said, well, just put a line there and you'll know that that was a chair. You know, it's very interesting because I had never heard you make that connection about really loving to capture a cup or a pencil, right, or a shoe. But it makes so much sense as I know you.
Yeah, and just, I mean, I used to have a lot of shame around things that I loved and things like the shame in liking objects. Like, shouldn't I be a minimalist and not have things? And is that shallow to really love a precious thing? And then also about drawing cups in my travel journals, I'm like, not really drawing buildings or really so much around me, but it's a lot of cups, coffee cups. And then one day I was teaching and I was like, you know, wait a minute, just love what you love. That's my whole life purpose, is to love what I love and share that and inspire people to love what they love. And I'm like, if you love cups, just draw cups. And one of the art series I did was the 365 cups. Mm-hmm. I made it to 185, but I loved that. And when I look back at that art series, that's my favorite. That's the thing I want to go back to. And I'm like, that's the most simple thing is a cup, but it means so much to me. And all those moments in cafes and at home with my journal, with the cup, with my creativity. I guess as I'm saying this, I'm realizing that the coffee and a coffee cup really is the ultimate symbol for me of my relationship to my creativity.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we've ended up kind of in a really interesting spot because I talk a lot about how growth work requires some kind of a, you know, learning project and an attention. And to me, what I hear you do in your life and what I feel like you have always done is you take on these kind of practices. Like you said, I was going to do 365 days of cups. And the thing about that is I think you have this very direct understanding that it what matters about it is the bringing yourself to it. And you're always taking on some new, and they're not the most difficult thing in the world, right? It's just that they bring you to it. And so could you just talk a little bit about how that connects to your own inner growth work over time? And I mean, I think you probably got many you could talk about, you know?
I love that. I love how you think and frame things. So I am a coach. I'm trained and certified, and I got into that because I'm into personal growth and who are we and what is possible and really interested in the human potential. And I right away focused on working with creatives, writers and artists and entrepreneurs. And I learned that having a project or like if you want to bring up your stuff and work through it, there's almost nothing better than there are many paths to that, but one path and path that I love is taking on a creative medium, taking on writing, taking on art, taking on business building. You will go through everything. You will go through all of your stuff about worth and value and good enough and taking up space on the planet. So I really love that. I'm working on a novel now that's based on an experience I had. And I'm getting so much from it. I can't even believe it. And it took me this long. It took me 15 years to be able to be with it. The time was finally ripe for me to be able to have some distance. But I feel like I'm learning about myself more than almost any therapeutic thing I've done from this novel.
Wow. That's saying a lot.
It's a ton. So can I give an example?
Sure.
You brought up loneliness. And I think for a lot of us who have an inner world that we maybe prefer to inhabit more than the external world, there's a certain loneliness. And I revisited the place where the novel is set recently, and I was alone, and I wanted it that way. I really wanted to be immersed in the experience and in the creative process. But right away, like the day, second day, I felt lonely. And I had this insight that kind of came as a line for the book, like something like, her loneliness was familiar to her. She'd been with it her whole life. And for the first time, wasn't afraid of it. Like it was a companion. And so both that moment of feeling that and feeling like, I'm okay with this. I know this loneliness. I accept this. And then feeling like that's something for the character too. That's just those layers of that was one of those like dopamine moments where my mind was just like, ah.
Well, again, through the character, right, you're actually getting to make contact with your own inner world. One of the things I have noticed in terms of working with people doing deep transformation work is sometimes they can't, it's too hard to make direct contact with certain painful places within the human experience. And I feel like what you just described is one way that people could think about writing instead of the idea that you're writing to put out a book or you're writing to accomplish something that you show other people. But in reality, what you're doing is you're writing to get a glimpse through like the many mirrors that a character can provide for you into yourself that maybe it's too scary to actually see straight out, right? Like if they were on your front lawn.
I feel that totally. And I have a notebook just for my novel ideas and thoughts and process and everything. And I wonder if I have had a hard time in therapy opening up, if this kind of like sideways mirror one of the ways. I'm reading this book that it's just such a great book. It's called Shut the F Up. And I meant to have it with me. It was something about how to stop talking in a world that's like too noisy. And it's so well done. It's hilarious. And it is addressing this issue of over-talking. Mm-hmm. The part that I read yesterday was about talking and thinking of ourselves in the third person as a way to distance ourselves from, I forget the name of it. It's a therapeutic modality. And I was like, that's what's happening with this book. Thinking of myself as a character has given me so many insights. And I love how gentle that is and creative. And I love how when we're writing or creating something, those things from our unconscious just emerge and sneak up on us.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I when you were talking, I must have had 9 places I could go from what you were saying. But I don't know. I'm going to instead go here. Do you think that you've had to develop the courage to face yourself over life? And the answer to that is yes, what do you think has been the scariest thing to face? It, like inside of your own life experience?
I don't know. I just think the human experience is so interesting. And it starts like, for instance, when you were introducing me and how you think of me is not how I think of me. Mm. And so I'm having this lived experience and then other people are having their experience of me. And so I feel like, and it's such an interesting question you ask, because I feel like the courage to face myself, really face my true self, in a way I'm just with me all the time. I think I know me, but so yes, I think I've had to develop that courage. And I think the thing that offers that opportunity the most, I mean, I guess the creative practice, but more for me, like the stuff that makes me want to run and hide, I think it takes a lot of courage is being in relationship and difficult conversations in relationships where I have to take a stand for myself.
Mm-hmm. As you were talking, responding, I thought, oh, what's so hard for me? And I think what I struggle with is when my actions or my way of being in some way has bumped up against someone else and I feel like I have done harm. And of course, you know, that when you do growth work, you start to realize it's all this dance or whatever, but it doesn't really matter because in the moment, you know, to see that, oh, I only cared about me there, right? Or the only thing that mattered in that moment was me making sure I won. And it didn't matter what happened to you. I think those are the moments that I have the hardest time really settling, you know, into my belly.
That happened to me last fall. And I won't tell the details, but I dialed you. I like dialed you. It was really the most horrendous, awful thing that I brought on myself. And it was so awful. And I made it through. And then I came home and it was time for National Novel Writing Month, where you just draft a novel in a month. And so I did that. And it wasn't really for anyone else or for the future, but that was, I wrote like 50,000 words. I told the story. I got it out using the third person, helped me see myself as a human. And I thought, wow, that was great. And I thought, wow, what if that's all my writing is for, really? If I just have these extreme experiences and then write about it to process. And if something happens with the book, great. But if not, like really the first thing is just, this is my therapeutic process. So, it was so painful, and to be able to kind of relive it and write it and see it from different angles was so helpful.
And that's really right. It takes courage to do that. And I think it also takes courage not to just gloss over it and say, oh, that was awful, or I was done with that. Right. And actually say, no, wait a minute. That was an experience that I left a piece of myself there for it. So I'm going to do the processing work. And that's one of the things I think you're a model for, is like even the fact that, and I wish I was visual for this particular interview with Cynthia, because she just has so many awesome visual things that she has created. But she does this, you do this year in review, where you actually go through the year and you make an entire book of what you learned and where you went and what you were. I mean, I am blown away every time I see what you've done there, that you actually take the time to do this kind of reflective process that's very creative, right? Like, when did you first get the idea to do that?
Well, my friend Jonathan did one, and, you know, when you have cool friends, you're just like, I'm going to do whatever they do. But he did that, and it just had a big impact on me. And it was a beautiful document with well-designed. And so the other thing that made me want to do that was permission to write a long piece about something, because I've been blogging for years and writing a newsletter for a long time. And like, keep it short, 300 to 500 words. And I was just so I feel like writing those long pieces, reflecting on the process, was just like a big freedom. Like, I'm doing this. I don't care what anybody thinks. And so I'm about to do that right now with launching something where I'm sharing the process about my novel writing, what I'm going through. And I've been thinking a lot about that. And why am I doing this? What's in it for me? What's in it for the people I'm writing it for? And it's hard because it is revealing a lot and it is so personal. But those are the things that people respond most to me. They will reflect, thank you for sharing your experience. Thank you for sharing that. So, and I think that's true for everybody and for creativity in general. The more personal it is, the more difficult it is to share it, the more potential impact it has.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, once again, in some ways, you're then a character for someone, and they get to see it in you, and they go, oh, well, she felt that, so that means I can feel that. And the next thing you know, I'm all about this liberation thing. So what you're describing, right, is all of a sudden there's a freedom for that person, and they didn't have to start with their own blank page to get it.
Yeah, great way to put it.
And don't you think the starting with the blank page, and I just want to, when we come back, I want to talk about this, is that so many people do not think they're artists, or they don't think they're writers, or any of that, when in fact, everyone can put a line on a page, and everyone can figure out how to put words on a page, even if they're three-letter words, and they're, you know, stacked on top of each other. And I just feel like somewhere along the way, Cynthia, you understood that. Like, you got it. But we live in a world where, in fact, I don't think a lot of people that would love to be able to put a line on a piece of paper, I don't think they get it. And so maybe when we come back from break, you can just talk a little bit about how that idea or understanding or depth of wisdom evolved for you.
Okay.
Okay.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out, and for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
All right, we are back. I'm Sam Parado. You're listening to Expedition Self, and we have a wonderful guest today, Cynthia Morris, and we were just before break, I was hoping that you could talk a little bit about how you seem to get from the inside out this idea that everybody can do art, everybody can write, everybody has this creative option to them if they don't get locked up, right, in thinking it has to be a certain way. So you had some time to think about it. What did you come up with?
I don't know. It just seems so obvious to me that we're just inherently creative. We just are. And the problem is that when I first started coaching, I was really like, I want to do creativity coaching. And what does that mean? Does that mean about being creative in life, or does that mean about making art? And I think when people hear the word creative, they just bundle it under making art or being a writer. And I think creativity is just inherent to the human experience. The way we do anything is a direct expression of who we are. So to me, there are a million ways that people are going to express their creativity, and it may be through art, it may be through how they build their business or plant their garden. Are you wondering about specifically about making art?
Well, yeah, because I actually feel like when we met, I view myself as creative, but I do not view myself as an artist. I didn't think I could draw anything but a box. And I like to draw little, you know, flowers that popping out of the ground with grass blades around them, you know. And I like to draw shapes and things. And to me, that was like, it landed in the realm of doodling, which in my mind, doodling meant nothing. And as it turns out, I can do my version of art, like whatever that means. And then the other thing is I wouldn't put anything on paper until I was 49 years old in terms of words. Like I wouldn't write anything. And I had this whole thing about, well, first of all, I didn't think I could write anything. Then I felt exposed. And then I kept, every time I would read it 6 months later, I would say, oh, I don't even think this anymore. Why did I write it? Because I've changed my mind. So I was so like bunched up. I'm going to use the word constipated with a whole bunch of presuppositions about what it was and what it isn't. And I just feel like your life, you haven't been bound by that, you know?
Well, I think you use the word that I think this is why we don't, is it is very exposing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I want to draw mushrooms. Why? You know, what's your deal? Like, what, you know, I don't know. I just like them, you know, like whatever. It's just like, it reveals something about us that we're not even aware of. And so, if we put something down on paper, it has that permanence that you're also afraid of. Someone else will see it and make stuff up about it. And I think there's something weird about art and drawing too, in particular, that people seem to bundle up this. There's some shame around being like, oh, I can't draw, as if you should be able to. Why would you be able to? I love seeing my first sketchbook from 2003, is so bad. And even 2008, it's so, I would say bad, just very tentative and hesitant and sketchy lines, not a confident line. I didn't know what to do with color. So it was just this kind of kaleidoscope crashing of colors. There was no coherence to it. And then you can see over time, I start learning and developing confidence in the line and clarity about choosing color. But if I thought, oh, I'm bad, I would just have stopped. I started drawing as a way to meditate. I read that in a book by Frederick Frank. And so that was what inspired me. And then I just kept doing it because it helped me. I'm drawing right now as I talk to you. It helps me be present, helps me be focused. And that was my whole goal. And especially, I'm initially a writer. And I remember very clearly when I got a rejection for my writing, and I said, I'm going to master writing. I'm going to dedicate myself to being good. At least you can hear my voice. You can hear the clenched jaw of determination to be good. And that was pretty much right when writing lost this joy. And around that time when I was drawing, and that's where I had no agenda to be good. I had no desire to be good. It just kept drawing because it felt good. And then over time that evolved. And whenever I would show my journal to people or people would see it, they loved it. They're like, wow, that's so great. And I'm like, what? This is not well drawn. It's not good. But what I realized was that my drawing had that freedom, that just innocence and that kind of joyful, unselfconscious expression that I think we all so want.
Right. And we just have to actually believe in, you know, in this moment, I just want to say something. I think people a lot of times will say, well, you had the luxury of time, or you didn't have to work so much, or they have a way to think that it's a, you know, is you have a space to be creative. But I want to make sure the listeners actually know how much you were responsible for your own living. You were responsible to pay your own expenses. You were on your own. You were driving your own cart. You were like an independent young woman and emerging woman, and you were completely creating life as you went to support yourself and to support all this creativity. And I think that's a really, I think it's a credit to who you are, Cynthia, but I also think it's important to that you are a model for, you can make you can make your life work so that it makes you happy and so that you do the things that you love, and you can figure out how to bring money in and, you know, to support all that. So maybe you might talk a little bit about what that was like for you.
Thank you for that. And all that's true. I did not get married until I was 50.
Whoa.
And so, right. I did. I made my way. I did it myself. Of course, I have great peers and allies, and I think it's similar to what I said earlier about if you want to get to know all of your stuff, pick up a practice, pick up an art practice, or start a business. And I remember really clearly, I took up coaching in 1999. I went and did the training and then got certified, started a business. I had no idea what I was doing. And I think that's probably the best way, like parenting, like if you knew what was involved, like the labor, would you do it? If you knew how much was involved in building a business, would you do it? I didn't. So, but I remember really clearly one day I was, in the course of 24 years of doing this, I've had to write a lot of sales letters and marketing copy and take a stand for what it is I want for people and how I'm the person to help them get it. And that is a very specific skill. It's a very specific kind of writing. And I never wanted to do that. But one day I was like, you have to send this email. You have to write this. And I'm like, I don't want to. And this inner voice said, well, better get your resume out and write that. Do you want to write your resume or do you want to write the sales letter? And I was like, okay, I'll write the sales letter. So, I still have that. Even just this week, I was like, I don't really want to do that. That's really hard for me. It makes me have to go out of my comfort zone. And I remember that moment. I'm like, yeah, that was 20 years ago and it's back. You have to keep going out of your comfort zone to make a living.
Well, that's the thing, right? You want something enough that it pulls you towards what I would call your growing edge. You're describing it as comfort zone. And when we want something, right, we feel that call to it. It really helps us get over ourselves.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And so that, I feel like I just want to say, like, I've been self-employed this whole time, but I know that there are people who have not. They work in an environment with other people. I think that has as many challenges, if not more, of how to interact with others, how to be authentic within a system.
Yeah.
I have great respect for that because at this point, I don't know that I could do that.
Well, I can tell you that I have been in business since 1985. And the reason I went into business is I was clear I could not work for anybody. And I had to better figure out how I was going to make some money because I was unmanageable with a capital U, you know? So I'm with you about that. Like what it takes to be that available and that engaged and to bring ourselves to that experience when we're actually inside with other people. You're right, Cynthia. You nailed that one for sure.
Oof. Well, so I want to draw a parallel between this, what you talked about, this kind of survival imperative, the need to make a living, and the creative drive, because I think the problem with our creativity is that we don't think it's vital to our lives and our well-being. But I believe it is. I believe that creativity should be on Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Mm-hmm.
When we're, and Brené Brown said this, she has this great quote. She said some years ago that unexpressed creativity is not benign. So all of that it's our life force, it's energy that we're not using. It gets just kind of stuck in there and it comes out in irritability and jealousy and crankiness. And, you know, we think we can live with that. But I tell you, when I had this experience just at Christmas time when I was taking a break. And after a week, I was like, okay. And I was so down and droopy because I had nothing to do. So no creative project. I really realized that, oh, I need to be engaged in a creative project to feel a sense of purpose, to feel a sense of my own self, and to feel engaged in life. So since I've been working on this novel, it's really hard. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if it's any good. I have high hopes for it and I keep showing up, but I feel that sense of purpose that I don't get from anything else.
Mm-hmm. What was that quote you said Brené said inside of what you were talking about?
Unexpressed creativity is not benign.
Uh-huh. It's not benign right now. I can see her saying that. So that's the thing. So when you're talking about having a creative project, is that this is the thing that turns on the switch beyond roboticism. And so we all, I think, at any given point have to keep choosing not to just allow life to reduce us to being doers. Right.
And beyond roboticism and also beyond capitalism. Mm-hmm. Because sure, I would like to see this be a bestseller. I'm working to make this be successful, but that's far away and not, you know, unlikely. Like, who knows? That's out of my control. I think that's the thing that we have to unplug from, it having to be efficient or good or monetized. And that's where we find that original impulse. That's where we find that, okay, there's the spark of my creative contribution.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's actually what you call your business, original impulse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I would even just say, is that like an original thing or what? We're going to call your business original impulse, where, you know, you get this visual right away of that, what is an impulse? And where does it live inside? So It's great, great, great point. Though one other thing I wanted you to just speak about is that I think that community and finding one person or three people or eight people that support the opening up of this other part of ourselves is super important. And I know you were involved in more than one community, but there was one that was in particular that you got to be immersed in. And I just wondered if you could just tell us a little bit about that and why it made a difference for you in terms of you becoming yourself and expressing your creativity.
You're talking about Good Life Project?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that in community, we, just like what happened in this call where you said, here's how I see you. When I got into Good Life Project, they really saw me. And so Good Life Project is an organization founded by Jonathan and Stephanie Fields. And he started with an immersion program, a year-long group of entrepreneurs and people who wanted to make a difference in the world and not kill themselves, sacrifice themselves and their well-being to do it. So it was very much about well-being and impact. And so I joined that. I applied for that. I was accepted. And that was right after, I was about to publish my novel, but right after that, that's when I was also becoming an artist and really wanting to have my creativity take up more space in my life. And so they reflected that back to me. When I showed them my sketchbooks, they were like, wow, you're an artist. This is amazing. And that really made a big difference. And also, one of the other people in the group is a master coach working with executives. And after meeting me and knowing me, she said, wow, you're a true coach, Morris. You are the real deal of coaches. And I was like, whoa, because coaching is one of the, you probably experienced this, where I realized right away when I started coaching that this was not the place to get validated. My clients weren't going to say, wow, you're so great at the end of our sessions. Like, they're working on their own stuff and they go away and they take it and go. And I'm like, go, you know, take that and go. So I hadn't, working mostly with individuals, I hadn't really had that reflected back to me, the strength of my coaching. And mm-hmm. that was really huge for me and my confidence. Mm-hmm. So, and then Jonathan hired me for several years afterward to be a coach in the program. So that that was massive for me to be able to stay in this community for that long and to have a role in coaching and facilitating trainings and designing things. And it really helped me realize how much I love collaborating and being part of that. And I met so many people like you. I'm here because of that. It was really helpful to get out of my shell. I would much prefer to just be at home making stuff, thinking, being in my head, being in my studio. So that really helped me to be a more fully realized human, to be with others.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in this moment, I just want to really make the point that I feel like when I talk to people that you are surrounded oftentimes like by your families or just a community that you got, right, because of your children or your job or whatever. But it is so important to make a friend that wants you to write, a friend that wants you to draw, a friend that wants you to be, to mirror back to you. You are all that and then some. And I feel like your story with Good Life Project, it speaks to that a lot. And I think we have a tendency in life not to say, I'm going to go find a group of people that think like I do, that are seekers, right? Mm-hmm. I want people to go find growth types. And and because it's just too hard to do all by ourselves.
It's true.
Right? Even though, go ahead.
They were growth seekers, and there was a lot of variety within the group. And so that made a difference too. I remember somebody did not like the group and I think left the group and like, I'm not here to make friends. And I wasn't here to make friends either, but it turned out that was exactly what I needed.
Well, you know what? That was a perfect, perfect sentence. I'm not here for this, but it turned out that's what I needed. That is the part, right, about life, is if we can, the creative process or taking on a creative project, like you talk about it, when you do that, you are saying to life, I'm doing this because this is what I'm intending, but I'm open to getting something I actually need. And I feel like that is the way we grow, is by giving over the control of it's got to go a certain way. And creativity does that, right?
Oh, totally. I was coaching somebody today about writing a novel, and I'm like, it's just a mess. Like, you just have, like, you think you know what you're doing, you're kind of in there, like, the chaos of creating, the loss of control, I think, is one of the things that we secretly want, like that flow state where you lose sense of time. But also, we're just so, like, trained against that, to like, be efficient, make progress, know what you're doing, look good. It's just a mess. Like, creating is messy. Like everything, life, parenting, relationships.
Well, I'm so glad you said that. Creating is messy. And that's the part, right? It's messy. You're not supposed to know what you're doing. You actually give yourself over to an experience. You, in some ways, have faith, right, that it'll bring something to you, even if it's noticing what it isn't, right? And so one of the things I just want to make sure you have a chance to talk a little bit about is that, you know, you have created all these different ways for people to be creative, but And even this place of I can be in this setting and then I can create from here. But you also run these really cool workshops in other places. And if you could just spend a little time talking about why does the other place create something different for people when they're like, this to me is when somebody's going to the next level, right? Where they want to experience themselves in an entirely new way and they really take a leap to do it. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I love this. Travel has always been a big part of my life and my growth. And I feel like we think that in some other place, we'll find something that's missing. And I'm always, when I'm on a trip, I'm always like, I have this idea that somehow I'm going to be a better person when I get home. Travel, I think of travel as a sort of boot camp. Like, you leave home, you got to go. And I'm a total homebody. So I have these two, like, so I travel with my coffee pot and my candle and my, you know, my five notebooks and books and my Shakti mat and all this stuff. I bring those things with me so I can take care of myself. But I think when we leave home, it's just a very basic kind of hero's journey. You leave home and you have no idea what's going to happen to you. And yeah. how it also is such a great way to see how your energy, I say energy and I sound so bolder, but I don't mean to, but just like how your vibe, how who you are is meeting the world. Are you, I remember being in Paris with someone and the woman was like, oh God, the people are just so awful here. Like, I just saw this big argument and all this. And I was like, yeah, that happens, but that's not what I'm focused on. I'm like how the great encounters that I've had, the beautiful things that I see. So it really gives me a chance to be mirrored in a kind of forced way. And mm-hmm. I think just getting outside of our normal roles and routines make a big difference. So I believe in this kind of formula of travel plus creativity equals transformation. So I started leading creativity workshops in France in 2003, really using kind of a journal or a sketchbook as the locus of the learning. So capturing things in the journal, drawing notes, writing, is a place to have direct contact both with the world and ourselves. Mm-hmm. When you look through one of those journals, you're going to reveal yourself. Just like we were saying, when you put something down on paper, it's exposure. So this is a way of revealing yourself in this place, in this time, and what you care about, what you focus on, what you're learning. And I love them. It's a lot of work. It turns out I'm really good at it. I'm really good at all the organizing and bringing a lot of care and thought to designing an experience for people. And then also having to completely let go of control, because mm-hmm. it's like serving a meal. People are going to come and eat it. Are they going to like it? How are they going to taste it? Are they going to chew enough? I don't know. I have no control over that. So I did a leadership training program, and that was how this first, it's a co-active leadership program. That was how the first creativity retreat in France came about. And so I take these as my leadership boot camp. I'm learning. So they're fun, and I've learned a lot. I've learned how to let go of control. I've learned to know what I'm responsible for and what I'm not. And I did one last year where I invited several friends to collaborate with me. And that was the best one because I had much less responsibility. I was able to like let go of control. Mm-hmm. So these are super fun. I do them in Paris. I'm going to do a creativity workshop in Lisbon next year. I also do writing workshops. I believe that that's a great way to travel, to not just go and see things and buy things, which I also love, but to be engaged with our artists in the lead.
Yeah. You know what I'm struck by, Cynthia, is that, you know, we were talking about being self-made and all of that. And then as the conversation has gone on, each kind of piece is that your life has blossomed to be more collaborative or to include other people. And it's like the more you have claimed, really fully claimed what lives inside of you and given room and voice to the unique way that you come through, that it's actually drawn more people to you to share in the journey with. It's a very cool thing when you think about how a life can evolve and take shape, you know?
It's one of the themes too of my novel. Like, my character would just really rather be alone, but also really, really wants to not be alone. Like, it's so much easier to be alone. Like, just leave me alone. And when I went on that trip recently, I was like, there's nothing I like better than walking around a European city by myself. I just love it. And then I told somebody that, and she was like, oh, I would never do that. And it made me realize, like, oh, we all really have a very specific thing we like, way of being. But so I think I want to say there's something that I'm learning about writing a novel. I always knew that you have to have a character who wants something and that has to be established right on the first page. And that part of what they go through is trying to get that thing. And that's what has the reader or the person watching the movie relate to that person in that story. But what I've just learned is that there also is something that they need that they don't know that they need, that they get later, that should, like, is forced upon them.
Oh, that makes sense.
So back to what you said about, I'm here for, not here for this, but it's what I need. It's so interesting.
Yeah. I think it is the element of growth, really what growth work is the capacity to trust more and more and more that life is going to give us the thing we need while we're also pursuing the thing we think we know we want. It's a great point, great place for us to circle back around and wrap up. I want to say thank you for being with me. Thank you for being in my life. Thank you for being a wonderful role model for all of us out there trying to find our own creative center and truth. And is there any last thing you have, like 20 seconds, that you'd like to share with everyone before we close out?
Thank you for being in my life, Sam. You have been a gift to me from the moment you came up to me and helping me be an open-hearted person. So I'm so grateful for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Okay, everyone. Have a wonderful week. I'll see you live in July.